There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Rank 'em 1 to 5.
I've got the power.
NFL Power Rankings.
All right, Denton. Washington's 5-2. They destroyed a team that they should have destroyed 40-7. The quarterback injury is not long term, we don't think. At least that's what Dan Quinn said. I take him at his word. So will Washington end up in each of our top fives today? I'll go first. I'll go 1 through 5. So I'm going to keep the Chiefs in at number one. They're certainly not overly impressive on offense, but they are when they have to be with the quarterback. They're being led by their defense right now. They're an excellent defensive football team. Right now, per DVOA, their rank is 4th in the league. Defensively, they're just behind Denver, Houston, and Minnesota. They're also, per DVOA on offense, they are 7th. It's a very good football team. It's just a team that we've seen now. You can't really judge them based on what they are in the regular season, even though they are 6-0. I've got them 1. I've got Baltimore 2. I considered Baltimore for number 1, and I think if they played Kansas City in a regular season game again, I think I would probably pick them to win. I don't know about the postseason yet, but Baltimore's everything that, you know, offensively, what Lamar Jackson's become as a quarterback, it's just so impressive. He's a completely different quarterback, I think, now than he's been. We'll see if it manifests itself into a deep playoff run for the first time. But right now, he is the runaway MVP front runner. I've got Baltimore at 2. I know you're going to have another team ahead of this team, which is fine because I think it's very close. But I'm going to put the Lions in at 3. They're just so explosive offensively. Borderline unstoppable at times offensively, like Washington is. And defensively, you know, they don't have Aiden Hutchinson. It is going to be a big difference. Last week against Minnesota, defensively, you know, they did give up close to 400 yards of offense against Minnesota. Aaron Jones had a big day on the ground. Sam Darnold had a decent day. They sacked him a bunch of times. The key was they got a big pick, but they held Minnesota because Minnesota's defense scored to, I think, 21 points. I like Detroit. I think in so many ways they may be kind of the team of destiny in the NFC, but health is everything, and they've already had one major injury. But like I said earlier this week, the two showdowns against Green Bay this year for Detroit, November 3rd, kind of a late afternoon highlight game on Fox, and then I think it's a Thursday night game against the Packers in at Ford Field. Those are two of the biggest games on the schedule in the NFC this year. Lions-Packers matchups. Number 4, I've got Green Bay. They're a really good all-around football team. I mean, the Packers right now rank defensively 8th in the NFL per DVOA, offensively 5th. Jordan, remember, that includes two games they played with Malik Willis, which they were pretty decent in. This is just a really good football team right now, all around, well coached. I've got the Packers at 4. And then at number 5, and I don't feel as good about it right now as I did last week, I'm going to put the Houston Texans in there. I still think Houston, by the way, excellent defensive football team. They have been shut down by, you know, a couple of really good defensive teams, the Vikings and the Packers. And I say shut down, they were not, you know, super, super impressive at times offensively against the Packers. C.J. Stroud was 10 for 21 for 86 yards passing at Lambeau on Sunday. He got sacked 4 times. Thank God they had Joe Mixon. That was their only way of moving the football. He had a big day running it. But I was a little bit hesitant because I'm like, man, Houston against the two best defensive teams on their schedule have really struggled offensively. But they themselves are very good defensively. I've got Houston at 5 and just, you know, on the cusp, I've got Minnesota and Washington. Your top 5.
All right, so we have very similar teams outside of one, just in slightly different orders. I have the Ravens at 1. I think Lamar's playing the best football of his career, and that's pretty impressive for a guy that's a 2-time MVP. On top of that, Derrick Henry is destroying this season, Kevin. I was looking at some stats, and I feel like now is a good time to actually like look at stats and see just, you know, how far ahead certain guys are. And if you look at the quarterback stats, you see like Geno Smith has about 50 yards separating him. He's the leading passer in the league. Between Baker Mayfield, who's 2. If you look at wide receiver, like Jamar Chase has 50 more yards than the guy who's sitting, which is Chris Godwin, at 2. And then you look at Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry, Jordan Mason is 2 in the league right now with rushing yards. And Derrick Henry has 200 more yards than he does. I mean, the guy is playing at an insane level. I can't believe that Tennessee thought he was some kind of washed up. Maybe they just needed to go in different directions. But that Baltimore offense feels like it is going to be impossible to stop as they continue to get better and better. And I think the Rashad Bateman coming on is very impressive as well. So I got the Ravens at 1.
So before you get to 2, Lamar Jackson was asked, I think yesterday or the day before, about Derrick Henry. And he said, I think he's going to set the NFL rushing mark this year. And I was like, what?
It's possible.
Well, actually, he's on pace to break Eric Dickerson's 40-year-old record. Dickerson ran for 2,105 yards in 1984. Right now, Derrick Henry at 124.7 yards per game with a 17th game, remember, he's on pace to rush for 2,120 yards. Dickerson, you know, did it in a 16-game schedule, and he broke O.J. Simpson's record, which was a 14-game schedule. So there are differences with that record with game count, but Henry's got 17 games, and he's on pace right now for 21-20. Keep in mind, if Baltimore is as good as we think they are and they wrap things up, he may not play a game late in the season, which maybe for the rushing mark. I'm going to bet that he doesn't get anywhere near that. In today's game, it is really hard to keep up that pace on the ground. And on Monday night, Denton, you know, it didn't start out that way. Like, he got basically most of his yards in the last quarter and a half.
Right.
You know, and he had another one of those massive runs. They all count. I'm not knocking it. He had an 81-yard run. But at one point in the game, you know, he had barely touched the ball, and Justice Hill was in there a lot more. And they were asking questions, the Monday night crew was, Buck and Aikman, like, why isn't Derrick Henry on the field? And then he came in and basically rushed for 169 yards in, like, you know, a half almost. Pretty impressive what he's doing. That's,
yeah,
for sure.
That's also going to be a really interesting coaching decision from John Harbaugh, and I'm sure Monken will be factored into this as well in terms of like the personnel decision making. Because if you are the Ravens, do you want Derrick Henry to break that record, or do you want to limit his carries at the end of the season to make sure he's good to go for the postseason? You know, not wear him out too much trying to chase a record that ultimately is awesome if you break, but at the same time, you're trying to win a Super Bowl this year and get back to the top of the mountaintop, which you haven't been able to do with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, they'll deal with that later if they're lucky enough to be in that position. By the way, I basically added it up. Derrick Henry, of the 169 yards he had basically 149 in the last quarter and a half of the game.
That's insane.
Yeah.
He's only had 3 games over 20 carries,
though. It was a
weird
game.
It was a weird game.
For him. All right, who do you have at 2?
I have the Chiefs at 2. You know, I'm never going to doubt Patrick Mahomes. It would be foolish to do so. But it is worth pointing out that the passing offense this year has struggled. Now, a lot of that is because of injuries. Like, they're not having the drop issues that they had last year, but they are having issues with guys staying on the football field. Maybe DeAndre Hopkins fixes that. I would still take Patrick Mahomes over anybody in the NFL in a postseason game, but at least in the regular season, even though they are unbeaten, that offense does not look as impressive as it has in years past. So I have them at number two overall. And then I get to the NFC, my first team. I got the Packers. Yeah, I know you and I have been like almost debating this entire week. Do you like the Lions? Do you like the Packers? And we both have them really close to one another. But I'm just leaning with the Packers because I really like Jordan Love. And I think Jordan Love is playing really good football right now. I think the way that they have allowed him to, not slowly, but the way that he has gotten better after he got healthy. You know, there was that scare at the beginning of the season that he might be out for a long time after that injury in the Philadelphia game. But the way that he's been playing recently, I really like what I've seen from Jordan Love. And right behind them, I have the Detroit Lions. Because if you take Jordan Love and say he's the best quarterback in the NFC, which right now I think he is, I say you put Jaden Daniels at number two, and then you put Jared Goff at number three. And even with the loss of Aiden Hutchinson, I think that offense is very dynamic in Detroit, and Jared Goff has proven, at least over the last 2 years, that he's very capable of leading an offense to very high heights in the NFC. Remember, there was so much conversation when he was in Los Angeles about, is this more just Sean McVay operating through Jared Goff? Like, is Jared Goff this vessel for the greatness of Sean McVay? And I think part of that was true, but we're also seeing now that Jared Goff's actually a really good quarterback in the NFL.
Do you know what his completion percentage is in the last four games against Arizona, Seattle, Dallas, and Minnesota?
I do not. I would imagine it's very high.
83.5%.
It's pretty good. If you're going to allow that to happen on a regular basis, you're in trouble. Because they got dudes on the outside. I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown is awesome. 83.5% is crazy.
He is just, he does not miss. If you protect him and you are able to be balanced with some running game and you get into the play action and you get into the boot stuff, he does not miss. He's a very accurate thrower.
He literally did not miss against Seattle. He was 18 of 18.
18 of 18 in that game.
Somehow he didn't have a perfect QBR.
He was 22 of 25 against the best defense in football, Minnesota, on Sunday.
With two touchdowns. He's not turning the ball over either, at least in the last three games. It's very impressive. So I got them at number four. And then I have the Bills at number five. I know you had the Texans there. I thought about the Texans, but I have the Bills at number five. I loved that Amari Cooper scored a touchdown this weekend, even though he didn't know the plays. But I love that he scored a touchdown. Getting him active, getting him acclimated is going to be really important because, as I've said a couple of different times this year, I didn't love their wide receiver situation. I don't even love Amari Cooper, but at least he is a number one option, whereas now you can kind of take a little bit of the pressure off Curtis Samuel and Keon Coleman and really off the tight ends because those were the number one options for a couple of weeks for Buffalo. So adding Amari Cooper there, I think, releases some of the pressure of the offense, and you'll allow Josh Allen to be Josh Allen. So I got the Bills at number five.
I think the Bills are interesting, too. I don't know what to make of them right now. I really don't. In the games that they were matched up against two excellent teams, they got blown out by the Ravens, and they lost to the Texans. Their wins are against the Cardinals, the Dolphins, that was the game Tua got hurt in, the Jags, the Jets barely on Monday Night Football, and the Titans. So I don't know what to make of the Bills. At least with Houston, you know, the offense is a concern against the better defensive teams, but they beat the Bills. They beat the Bears. They beat a Colt team early. They were right there with the Packers in a loss. I'm wondering if Houston offensively, if we're seeing a step back season from C.J. Stroud. You know, we need more. We need a bigger sample size against good teams and good defenses. You know, they'll face you know, the Chiefs. They've got the Titans twice. Good defensive teams. They're an interesting team. The AFC is going to be really interesting because right now it's clearly KC and Baltimore. But what are Houston and Buffalo? What's Pittsburgh with, you know, if actually Russ plays at a level that's much beyond what they've had at quarterback? Where does Cincinnati come into this if they get on a roll? Because they're certainly capable of it. Are the Chargers a playoff team? Are the Jets going to get on a roll? You know, we already talked about yesterday the Jets. I think maybe an underrated part of their 2-5 start is just how dominant the defensive teams they've played are on their schedule. You know, every single defensive team, every team that they have lost to has been a top 10 defensive team per DVOA. The 49ers, the Broncos, the Vikings, the Bills, and the Steelers. And they've got more of those coming up. They've got the Texans a week from tonight on Halloween. The NFL's great. The NFL is just so good because every year when you go into this, you think you know, but you don't. You don't. The 49ers are 3-4. You know, and the I guess we know a little bit about Baltimore and Kansas City. That's been a consistent theme. Who had Washington at 5-2? Who had Minnesota at 5-1? Nobody would be the answer to that. Seattle going to win the NFC West, Denton?
Maybe now. I mean, now that whatever is going on with San Francisco is happening, which is not a lot of good, as you know, maybe. I did see a funny tweet. Like, it wasn't that funny, but it was really funny that the healthiest wide receiver on the San Francisco 49ers on Monday was a guy that got shot 2 months ago because Brandon Ayuk is down. Debo Samuel is hospitalized with pneumonia. So they literally have no healthy wide receivers. If they can't get healthy, like Brock Purdy is not, he is not the quarterback that is going to, as they say, make a wide receiver. Like, I don't feel like he throws guys open. I feel like he throws to open guys. And eventually you're going to have to throw guys open if you're dealing with guys that cannot get separation the way that like Ayuk and Debo Samuel do.
What did Ricky Pearsall do in his first game? 3 catches, 21 yards.
Yeah, not bad for a guy that was shot like 2 months ago.
Yeah. I'm going to say that the 49ers win the NFC West. That they get it together, they get healthy, and they end up winning that division. You know, it's not going to be a great record. That's the opportunity that Washington has. You know, you got to look when they start, if they win Sunday, and that's a big if, okay, it's certainly, they're an underdog Sunday. And even if Jaden plays healthy, they're probably pick 'em -1 at best case. This opportunity in the NFC with the West down, with the South probably producing a 9-8 or a 10-7 division winner, the opportunity to be a top 2 seed in the NFC is legit. And that means you're playing, you know, 2 home games as a 2 seed. You got to play that first round. As a 1 seed, you get every game at home, and you only have to play and win 2 of them to get to the Super Bowl. You got to think about the opportunity that has presented itself to your team. Maybe you wait to see what happens Sunday next week in the Meadowlands. You've got until Tuesday, November 5th. But Harold Landry's a name that's recently come up. I guess there's some reports out there that maybe he's available. Tennessee's interested in, you know, moving on from him. He's been an excellent pass rusher. Tore his ACL a couple of years ago. Has a couple of years left on his contract. I loved Harold Landry coming out of Boston College. He's been, at times, a very, very good pass rusher. Would he fit in this scheme? Interesting. I don't know. Are there any ties with Harold Landry and the current coaching staff? I don't think so. But like I said to John earlier and Ben, I think, on Monday, even if they lose Sunday, I still think you got to recalibrate your recalibration. This is an opportunity that you're not guaranteed to have, even though you're doing things the right way. We'll certainly have more conversation about the trade deadline. In terms of Denton, a team outside of each of our respective top fives to keep an eye on, I would definitely say for me it's Washington, but I think that's kind of obvious. I guess the other one would be Washington's opponent Sunday. You know, you liked Chicago before the season started. The Bears are an excellent pass defense. Charge pointed that out. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. They have weapons offensively. This was the best situation for a #1 overall quarterback to go into in years because of the talent they have. I think Shane Waldron's doing a good job. I think Eberflus has always been a bit of an underrated defensive guy. I thought he was a very good coordinator in Indy when he was there before he got the job. I think a lot of people are surprised that he retained the job, but a good job by the Bears in being patient. Outside of my top five and nowhere near the top five right now, a team to keep an eye on, I would say the Chicago Bears. You know, if they come here Sunday and win, they're 5-2 with games against the Cardinals and the Patriots over their next 2 weeks before they have the first of two massive showdowns against the Packers. Remember, they have not played a division game against the Packers or the Lions yet. They haven't played a division game, period, yet. Chicago hasn't. They still have all six of their NFC North games left. It's probably best for them that they didn't play those teams early in the season, that they're playing them as they've gotten sort of Caleb more comfortable. The Bears are going to be an interesting team to watch. Did you have a team outside of your top five?
So I do like the Bears for reasons that you mentioned, but I'm going to look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're 5-2. They have the New York Giants this weekend, and this to me is a much different game because you're going to see what Russell Wilson is made of. We know the Jets defense has been very much underperforming relative to their expectations, specifically that pass rush. We look at the New York Giants, they got a pass rush. So will Russell Wilson be able to do what he did against the Jets to this Giants defense that is going to put significantly more pressure on him? I think if he can, I don't love Russ. I made that very, very clear. But I think if he can, you might see, Pittsburgh would at that point be 6-2, and we might be able to have the conversation. Maybe we're seeing a little bit of that old Russell Wilson. So if they have a strong showing against the Giants, I would look at a 6-2 Pittsburgh team and say we might need to consider them.
I like that one too. I like that one a lot. By the way, somebody just texted me something that I want to share with everybody when we come back. It's a possible tie with a team that may have a player available. And we'll update you, Cliff Kingsbury speaking right now on the anything we learn about Jaden Daniels. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
And Ben Sinnott, Dan made the comment the other day, like, boy, you got to clearly throw in the ball all the time. It's catching a touchdown. Mm-hmm. How has he been progressing? And do you see this may be a start of him being even more involved than he has been to this point?
Yeah, definitely. His first catch was a touchdown, and the play was called Taylor Swift. So you can't really beat that to start your NFL scoring career. So he was stoked about it. But he's been getting better and better. I think the game's slowing down for him. He's a tremendous talent. Can do a bunch of different things with his run game, pass game, very physical. You know, was well coached at Kansas State, so understands the run game scheme at a high level for being a guy who can be involved as much as he is in the pass game. So we're excited about his future. There's a bunch of them. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. Uh-huh. But that's a good one. We'll use that again.
How long have you had a
Cliff Kingsbury? I don't know. I know this is Taylor Swift. I certainly recognize the voice. I don't know the catalog. I do know that super long song. What's the name of that super long song that she did on SNL? About her ex-boyfriend, what's-his-face,
Jake Gyllenhaal. Well, I was playing this song. I didn't need to go back and watch the actual play again. I was hoping they would be in 22 personnel. So that would have made. I have no idea what that long song is called.
It was a bootleg throw.
Yeah, it was a two tight end set. I need to see if they had two running backs in or if it was just one guy back there.
Well, we can find out, but whatever. What's the name of the song that I'm trying to come up with?
I have no. I'm not exactly well versed in the Taylor. I think they're always in the title. Somebody help us out here. We are not Taylor Swift fans.
We don't need that help. I mean, it's not that important. But I remember when she did that song on SNL. It was like forever. It was like a 10-12 minute song. Am I right?
Yeah, because they did a video with Sadie Sink, who you're the
yeah, exactly.
girl from Taylor Swift
from Stranger Things. Yeah,
All Too Well. See, I knew All was in the title.
All Too Well. That's it. My wife likes that song. I think my wife actually really likes Taylor Swift. I think a lot of people like Taylor Swift.
She's the biggest pop star in the world, so I would assume.
Yeah,
that a lot of people
I'm talking
do.
About people. You know, by the way, I don't really believe in guilty pleasures. Like, I think, you know, if you like something, you like something. You know, why consider it to be a guilty pleasure? Because it's not something that matches up with your age or your gender or your demographic. That's stupid. It's art. It's subjective. Music, it's subjective. So if I listen to Taylor Swift, it's very possible that I would like some of the stuff, and I'd be on here telling you to play a lot of it as rejoin music.
Well,
you know what movie was incredible with Sadie Sink? We talked about this when it came out. Is The Whale. Did you see The Whale?
I did not.
Oh, God, that was so good. That was an excellent movie, and Brendan Fraser was so good. Did he win for that?
Yes, he did. Because I remember it was a whole big thing that he won because he had, like, come back from something, and so I remember that he won.
And she was phenomenal in that movie. So good in that movie. And she's great in Stranger Things, which we get next spring, right?
Yes. It'll be, what, 3 years from when the last season was? Got to go back and rewatch it.
That's, you know what? That's not a bad go back and rewatch show.
It's not, but that final episode in the last season was 2.5 hours. It was literally a long movie.
It was long. So, my good friend Jeremy Huber, you know Jeremy, I think. Sirius XM, lots of, you know, you hear Jeremy's voice a lot on different places doing sports. He texted me, he goes, Rand Carthon is the GM in Tennessee. Duh. Yes, I forgot. Thank you, Jeremy. Rand Carthon and Adam Peters together in San Francisco for several years. So the link to Tennessee, if Harold Landry or anybody on Tennessee ends up being trade bait, if they end up being sellers, but Harold Landry in particular, there is a good relationship between Rand Carthon and Adam Peters. Sometimes you need that to make a deal. You know, witness what happened. We were talking about Detroit and the Rams and the Jared Goff trade, the Matt Stafford trade. You know, you had Brad Holmes, who had been with Jared Goff in L.A. A lot of times that's how deals get done in the NFL. It is familiarity between, you know, front offices, coaches, agents, etc. Rand Carthon, I forgot, was one of the hot GM candidates. He went to Tennessee. Adam Peters went to Washington in the offseason, and they were together for several years in San Francisco. If Washington ends up being in a position to be a buyer, which I think they are now, again, let me emphasize, I'm not saying buy for buying's sake. I'm saying that if there's a player that can significantly enhance their defense, improve their chances to win more than just, say, a playoff game or two, then I would be disappointed if they're not considering that. I think, I think how you felt 6 weeks ago that you have to evolve, you've got to be open to thinking differently if the season goes differently, which it has. They're in a situation that I don't think anybody expected them to be in. Not just 5-2, but in first place and the favorite to win the division. And with a legitimate shot right now, the way things look, at potentially a top 2 seed. They also could be a team that, you know, has beaten up on some teams that aren't very good, and they'll lose to the Eagles, and they'll lose to the Bears, and they'll lose to the Steelers, and they'll lose to the Falcons, etc., and they'll barely be clinging to a 7 seed when we get into late December and early January. That's a possibility, too. That's for them to figure out. What would one player or two players added to our defense for a reasonable cost, not loaner, not rental, but somebody that could stick around because they've got a contract, or we could get them signed to a long-term contract, somebody that's in prime years or entering prime years, as Landry is at 28 years old, that's a name to keep in mind. So there you go.
I feel like he's a much more achievable option. Like, I would love Max Crosby. Max Crosby's not getting dealt. But if you know this team, who are they made a trade today. They traded another linebacker today.
Who did? The Raiders?
The Tennessee Titans did. Oh. So it feels like they
who'd
are
they trade?
In that. Let me go pull it off of Schefter's Twitter. It was not Harold, thank God. But I feel like they're in that position where they might be looking to sell. They traded Ernst Jones the fourth.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Seattle. That was yesterday. Yeah.
Oh, so sorry, it was made official today. Okay. But if they're in this mode where they're going to sell, I do wonder what the pay would be for Harold in terms of once you actually make the trade. Because my guess is there's an opt out after this year. He's probably going to want a new deal if he gets dealt at his new home. I wonder what that pay would be, but you're looking at a guy that already has 4 sacks this year, so he's playing good football. He had, you know, double-digit sacks each of the last 2 years. I kind of like the way that Washington's defensive line is starting to shape up. I think Dante Fowler played awesome this weekend. I think some of the other guys, once they get healthier, are starting to, like, get into a rhythm with one another. But if this guy's available, I think you absolutely go and get him because you're probably getting him for, like, a fourth-round pick. And I don't know if you're drafting anybody in the fourth round that's going to be better than a guy that's had double-digit sacks in the last 2 years.
Keep in mind something, and it's not really relevant because teams just aren't in base defense that much, and Harold Landry has lined up in multiple spots. But Tennessee is a base 3-4 defense. They are, by the way, a good defensive team right now. New coaching staff with Brian Callahan, et cetera. Just, you know, they don't have the quarterback position figured out. That's their biggest issue more than anything else. I did want to mention one thing because I was looking at the Landry stuff and looking at Tennessee before the show started. You know who looks terrible and looks completely disinterested on that team because of the quarterback situation is Calvin Ridley. He actually looks borderline unprofessional in how frustrated he's gotten. That quarterback situation is a mess. But Landry is a hand in the dirt, you know, in nickel, go get the quarterback guy. He's versatile. He can run and cover. Harold Landry can really cover. You don't want him doing that. You want him rushing the passer. But again, we're a bit premature probably on this stuff, but these are the things that I would hope Washington is at least looking at, and I'd be surprised if they're not. I know that the opinion from those on the beat, at least Ben, John, and others, is that they wouldn't do anything big. You know, they might do something marginal, a depth piece. That's not what they need. I mean, they could use a depth piece, but if they win Sunday and they are 6-2, with a game in the Meadowlands next week against a Giant team that can't score, capable defensively, you're within a week of the trade deadline. I just, being honest, as much of the benefit of the doubt that I'm giving this new group, I would be shocked if they haven't changed the conversation about what they would do in season. I mean, that's one of those where, you know, you would think that they're going to present something to the owner. Hey, here's where we are. Here's where we thought we would be, but here's where we are. Let's deal with reality. You know, these moments aren't always guaranteed where you're the front runner to win a division. You're in the hunt to be a top two seed in the conference, which gives you a chance to win a couple of playoff games and get close to that thing they call the Super Bowl. And we're flawed on defense. And we could use a corner and a pass rusher. Of course, some of you may say they've found their pass rusher. It's Dante Fowler Jr. It's, you know, he's really coming on. And, oh, by the way, Big Phil's played well. Phil Mathis has played well. By the way, you know who played well last weekend? 94 played pretty well. Duran played pretty well in the first game without John Allen. I didn't think their D tackles were, you know, an issue at all on Sunday without John. But, again, that game got sideways quickly. What was Carolina really after they fell behind and gave up the pick six? All right, when we come back, Jerry Jones, we will update you. Kingsbury was still talking. Nothing yet on Jaden Daniels and whether or not he's going to practice today. When we get that, we will let you know. But Jerry Jones said something yesterday about his head coach, Mike McCarthy, that you have to hear. We'll have that for you next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Hey, As Kevin just mentioned, still awaiting news on whether or not Jaden Daniels is going to practice. Hopefully we get that information before the end of the show. If not, Chris Russell will break it down as soon as he gets it. Speaking of local teams, though, how about last night? Caps win their fifth in a row, 6-3 over the Flyers. Alex Ovechkin scored his second goal of the season. That's 855 for his career, 39 away from tying the great one. The Wizards tip their season off tonight against the defending champs, rather, the Boston Celtics. That's at 7 p.m. at Cap One. Pregame starts right here on the Team 980 at 6:45. And that's what's trending.
So nothing as of now on Jaden Daniels. These coordinators are talking prior to practice. So just keep it here all day long. Chris, Craig will have any information on whether or not Jaden Daniels practices. I think if he does, he's playing. If he doesn't, I think you can almost call it a day on Sunday against the Bears. That's my guess. And my guess is right now he doesn't play Sunday, meaning that he doesn't practice today. That's my guess. Probably be proven wrong in about 10 minutes. Denton, last night in college football, before we get to this Jerry Jones stuff, I texted you. Your Liberty squad, undefeated, playing against Kennesaw State Wednesday night football on CBS Sports Network. Kennesaw State was 0-6. How big of an underdog were they?
Oh, I think it was like 20 points. Oh,
27 point underdog. 27.
Not great.
And Liberty lost the game 27-24. That's the biggest upset of the season.
Yeah. Somehow that's a bigger upset than Northern Illinois beating Notre Dame. I've been spending all morning looking at big lines this weekend. I'm like, can somebody pull a huge upset? And there's no bigger line this weekend. I'm like, even Nebraska isn't as big of an underdog against Ohio State as Kennesaw State was against Liberty. Now that would be viewed as
Kennesaw State is?
I do. Kennesaw State, here's a Liberty football history lesson for you, because I know you're dying for this information. Yeah. Kennesaw State used to be a rival of Liberty when the two teams were in the FCS, so I do know that they're in the state of Georgia.
Are they in Atlanta?
Is the school
in Atlanta?
I think they're just outside Atlanta.
You're right. They are northwest of Atlanta. They're in Marietta.
In Marietta, basically. Georgia. Yeah.
So that's a suburb of Atlanta.
Yeah, they're the Owls. I was watching this game with my dad, and the student section was doing like the threes over the eyes but connected. And he's like, what are they doing? I was like, no, they're the Owls. So I guess that's a little mating call.
Okay.
It was an ugly game. I was not happy.
They stormed the field on the last play of the game. Then they had to clear the field because there was 1 second left. And I kept thinking, this is going to end badly for Kennesaw State somehow.
I was hoping it was going to end badly for them.
Yeah, but it didn't.
I did not love the final play.
I've got a smell test pick for Thursday night coming up. But this was Jerry Jones yesterday talking about the state of the team and specifically a bit about Mike McCarthy's offense.
Designing bad plays, or we're designing bad concepts. The facts are that there's some of that, but there's also some of execution. There's some of the talent. I like our talent. I really do like our talent. I like our young talent, but young talent has a few more mistakes associated with it than if you are dealing with a veteran player.
If you missed the beginning of that, he said, we're designing bad plays or we're designing bad concepts. The facts are that there's some of that, but there's also execution, talent, etc. I mean, what are you doing? Somebody's got to stop old Jarrah from talking. Mike McCarthy, you know, on a Wednesday, as he's preparing for a massive game off the bye week, you know, in San Francisco against the 49ers Sunday night, that's the first question asked. And he said, quote, I talk to Jerry all the time. We have to go through the self-scout. So I didn't see the comments specifically. I don't think we have bad concepts and bad plays, but I'll go back and check. Wow. Done. Cooked. I mean, I guess they could turn it around, But you can't throw your head coach, the guy you hired and kept after he embarrassed you and your fandom in the postseason against the Packers. You kept him, you hired him, you've stayed with him. You can't at 3-3 coming off the bye week throw him under the bus about his plays and his concepts. I was thinking about, you know, how for all of those years we just had the most miserable situation here. But imagine how much more miserable it would have been had Dan not been a recluse. He was a total public recluse. He did all of his damage behind closed doors. We never heard from him. Can you imagine how awful it would have been had he been holding a press conference every week? If he had talked after games, held his own presser after games. I mean, one of the reasons Dan didn't do that is he was very uncomfortable as a communicator, as a public speaker. He was very, very nerve-wracked in those situations. So he's the opposite of Jerry as far as that's concerned. But if I'm a Cowboy fan, I'm just like, I've had enough. This guy needs to go away. Somebody needs to stop him from talking. They got to shut down the tours that where the fans are coming through while they're practicing and lifting weights. We got to stop having him land his helicopter on our practice field on a Wednesday during practice. He did that a few weeks ago. I mean, they haven't been terrible at player acquisition. You know, he and his son, Steven, and the group they put together, McClay, et cetera, they haven't. But they're just way too disruptive to the normalcy of a functional franchise. How do you do that to your coach in the middle of the season? And then, what were you going
to
say?
I'm stunned that it's not a requirement for Mike McCarthy to listen to Jerry Jones's weekly interview. Take some notes on it. Report back to the head man. Maybe report to his
God
AI hologram.
He has to interrupt his preparation for the next opponent to listen to his owner's press conference or deal with him. I mean, we didn't play the sound of McCarthy, but I heard it earlier this morning when he said, "I don't think we have bad concepts and bad plays, but I'll go back and check." I mean, bad situation. Horrible situation in Dallas. All right, I do have an early week 8 smell test selection for the NFL. I know it hasn't gone well recently. I'm down 4 or 5 games below 500. 4 games below 500, I think, on the season. We got a long way to go. Still plenty of time to turn it around. But tonight, the world is on Minnesota laying 3. At SoFi against the Rams. So I'm on the Rams plus the 3. Do with it what you choose. The NFL's last 2 weeks have been an absolute disaster. I'm probably going to have somebody on the show tomorrow to kind of discuss that. I told you about 2 weeks ago. Last week was also horrible. 2 of the worst consecutive weeks for sportsbooks in over a decade. The public's just won big. The last 2 weekends. And they are on the Vikings tonight off of that emotional loss against Detroit on Sunday, walk-off field goal against a Rams team that has obviously struggled this year, primarily because of injury. The Rams are 2-4, the Vikings at 5-1. The Rams held on to beat the Raiders in a close game on Sunday. So Rams plus 3. Come on, Sean. Keep this one close. If you lose, lose by 2 or 1. We'll see the return of Cooper Kupp. That will certainly help. All right. Keep it here, as mentioned, all day long. I'm sure there will be news as to whether or not Jaden Daniels is practicing. The injury report will certainly reflect that later on today. You'll get that at the very least. All right. We're done. Chris is up next.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.